welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM, WMNF.org. My name is Sean Canaan. Today we're going to look at civil rights era incident in Jacksonville called Axe Handle Saturday, in which a white mob beat up dozens of black civil rights activists. The 60th anniversary of what's called Axe Handle Saturday is in August. It coincides with when the Republican National Convention will be in Jacksonville. Later in the show, we'll hear from a Jacksonville activist who participated in civil rights demonstrations as a child and remembers Axe Handle Saturday. First up, though, we're going to hear how Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is explaining the massive spike in new cases of coronavirus in the state. We might also hear a little bit of sound from President Trump's Tulsa rally. We heard a million people wanted to be there. Not quite that many actually showed up. And we'll take your calls on all of these issues. And I also want to thank everyone who donated last week to our one-day membership drive. We did make the goal on that drive. So turning now to our first subject, Florida has passed 100,000 officially reported positive cases of coronavirus. More than 3,000 new cases were reported again today. The rising number of new cases has prompted health officials to reissue advisories urging social distancing. Some businesses are also reevaluating their decisions to reopen. On Saturday, Florida set a record high of 4,000 new cases. The number of COVID-19 deaths in Florida is now at least 3,173. Pasco Schools announced today that its superintendent, Kurt Browning, has tested positive. And the Hillsborough County Emergency Policy Group will consider face coverings during an online meeting this afternoon at 1:30. Pinellas County will also consider masks this week. So right now we'll talk about Governor Ron DeSantis, who on Saturday spent some time trying to explain the rise in coronavirus numbers in Florida. He mostly brushed off concerns, but he emphasized that CDC recommendations must be followed. Things like wearing face coverings in public and reducing trips outside, especially among elderly or vulnerable individuals. DeSantis stressed spread in certain groups like prison inmates, farm workers, and people in elder care facilities. We'll hear in just a little bit of what he said, but I want to get your take on it as well. So call in 813-239-9663. We didn't get to calls last week, but we will take your calls this week, 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So here's a little bit of what Governor DeSantis said on Saturday.
We're hearing a lot of coverage focused on the number of cases, and there were many more cases identified, certainly in the last 4 days. Previous week was higher than the last. But I think it's also important to provide some context and perspective in terms of what that actually means. When somebody talks about a case, that means that somebody has taken what's called a PCR test, and that test has come back positive, identifying some existence of the virus in that individual. Sometimes the virus is no longer active but can still be detected. Sometimes it's an active infection. Somebody who tests positive may not have any symptoms at all and not even know they're infected. Some people may have some symptoms but not require any medical attention and basically just need to isolate at home. And then some people have symptoms and then require clinical attention. The vast majority of the cases that we're seeing right now in the state of Florida are with people who are presenting without any symptoms. So a lot of these folks, and I'll go over the younger demographic, these are folks, I think many of them are probably being tested because of returning to the workforce. But that has been something that we're seeing time and time again. And it's also important to understand a case now is a lot different in terms of what it would mean compared to a case in, say, March, in the certainly the first part of April. When the coronavirus first came on the scene, January, February, there weren't a lot of these tests available per the CDC. The tests that were administered initially were for people who were symptomatic and had traveled from China. And if you hadn't done that, then they just didn't test you because they didn't think there was any virus that you could have acquired here. Eventually, as February wore on and you started to see other international locations, places like Italy were added to that. And so if you were symptomatic and you had been to those places or then been in contact with somebody from those places, you know, then you could get a test. But if you were just somebody who had been in the United States mid-February, say, hey, I don't feel good, I'm coughing, they would not have tested you most likely for coronavirus. As we got into mid-March and like the state of Florida set up some of these drive-through test sites, initially when we did that, now there were always people who could get a prescription from their doctor if they didn't fit this criteria, but in terms of like the publicly available testing, most of it was limited to people who were displaying symptoms and who were 65 and older. So the big site we did down in Broward County with the Florida National Guard, those were the folks that were being tested because they are the ones who were the most at risk. And it was thought that if you're 65 and plus but don't have symptoms, you're either not infected or the infection is not taking a toll. So that was what was started. You still tested a lot of people like that. As that wore on in some of our test sites in the state, that age was reduced to try to get more volume. So if you were symptomatic in 50, you go through, and then that was reduced even further. So if you had symptoms, you could go in and do it. But it was still testing largely focused on symptoms. The folks who were tested who were not symptomatic tended to be healthcare workers who may have been exposed to COVID-19, first responders who may have been exposed. They would be tested regardless of whether they had symptoms. But for the member of the public, absent a prescription from a doctor, most of these places that you would go, and certainly Florida sites, did require symptoms. Well, what happened is when we went May in terms of the reopening, we thought it was important to have widespread testing. We set up a bunch of new test sites all around the state, Southwest Florida, Space Coast, Northwest Florida, Sarasota, all these places, more in Southeast Florida, which is we had a lot during the March and April period anyways. And basically it was, if you want to get tested, get tested. You don't have to have symptoms. There's not going to be any age. You got to be 18, obviously, if you don't have a parent's permission. But that was what we had put out. And the idea was we knew that there were a lot of people who carried this who weren't necessarily symptomatic. And we started to understand more of that, I think, as April went on in terms of asymptomatic carriers. So we wanted, if a business had employees, be able to send them in, get tested. Even if you're not symptomatic, you could potentially still be infected, and we wanted to be able to do that. So that's what's been really happening through, certainly by mid-May when we got all these sites running, and then now what you see going on now. And not only that, anyone that goes into the hospital for anything other than COVID is still being tested for COVID, certainly if you're getting a procedure done. And so you're seeing way more kind of widespread surveillance testing going on. So that's a big difference from where we were in the beginning of March. And I think what we've seen now has been a really significant increase in positive test results for people in their 20s and 30s. If you look today's cases, there was a large number of cases reported. The median age in these, select counties that are seeing, a lot of movement is incredibly low. When we started this in March, the median age was 65. As the testing started to ramp up, it ended up being in the 50s. And that was pretty much where it was for weeks and weeks and weeks. Now what we've seen, basically concurrent with the rise of the cases, has been a decline in the median age of the people who are testing positive. So you look at a place like Broward, the median age is 32, meaning half of the identified cases were 31 and under. Duval, age 29, under 29 was half of the cases in Duval County in today's report. Hillsborough, 30. Orange, 29. Pinellas, 29, and Seminole, 27. So that is a really significant skew. Most of the people in those age groups who are going to get tested are asymptomatic. The vast majority of the people in that queue who test positive do not require clinical attention, and that's just because of the way the coronavirus works. It tends to impose the most significant clinical consequences on people that have significant underlying conditions and or are 65 and older. So we're seeing a major shift in this direction with this large 20 to 30s year old population, mostly asymptomatic, but we're also seeing that not only are they testing positive because they're testing more, they're also testing positive at a higher rate increasingly over the last week. And that's something that you want to look at, because when you have an asymptomatic illness, if you test 100 people and you get 10 positives, you test 200 and you get 20, that's kind of what you would expect. Well, here, even with testing increasing or being flat, the number of people testing positive is accelerating faster than that. And so, you know, that's evidence that there's transmission within those communities, particularly the 20s and 30s. So again, not huge clinical consequences, but in terms of spread and in terms of some of the vulnerable populations, you know, eventually seeping in there, you know, certainly a cause for concern. But our cases are shifting in a radical direction younger. You've also heard a lot about, and so just to put a bow on that with the ages, a new case, when people say that, I think given what we know about coronavirus affecting the elderly, is, okay, cases for who? And if it's a lot of 25-year-olds, chances are that's going to have limited clinical significance. I think for sure, if you had 1,000 cases under the age of 30, that would have fewer clinical significance than if you had 15 cases of residents of a long-term care facility, for example. That's just the way the disease tends to work. So that's really important to know who is testing positive, and we've definitely seen a big change here in the last couple weeks.
Governor Ron DeSantis said on Saturday about the state's skyrocketing number of coronavirus infections. What do you think about what he said? Here's the number to call in, 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. Make sure you put your name on it. You are listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan, and it is 12:18 in the afternoon. Florida has passed 100,000 officially reported positive cases of coronavirus. More than 3,000 new cases were reported again today. And a teenager died last week. That's the youngest victim in Florida so far. And I just want to remind people that in a few minutes we will hear about a civil rights era incident in Jacksonville called Axe Handle Saturday, in which a white mob beat up dozens of black civil rights activists. I want to read an email that came in. This person, Karen in Dunedin, says DeSantis is something that I'm not going to say on the air. If it's because of more testing, how does he explain more hospital cases? It breaks my heart, the false security being given by Trump, DeSantis, and others. I don't know how they can sleep at night. These are needless deaths for the sake of capitalism. So thank you for that email from Karen in Dunedin, and you can email in as well, dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. Make sure you sign your name, or you can call 813-239-9663. And to Karen's point about hospitalizations, DeSantis addressed the hospitalizations later in the interview, in the press conference, and hospitalizations are going up in Florida, but they're not to the point of where there's no ICU beds or there's no room in hospitals right at this point. And so DeSantis said that we're in good shape as far as hospitals. He also said that PPE, personal protective equipment, is good for the state. So he is kind of downplaying the issue with hospitals. One of the points that he made is that, yes, there are fewer beds available now than were available, say, a month ago, but that's because elective procedures are going forward. So in that case, they could, you know, the hospitals are in a position where if they needed more hospital rooms for coronavirus patients, that they could make that adjustment. So I'm just responding to one of the things that Karen said about hospitalizations. And you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. And I think we have one more email that I can read before we move on. This person says, when did crummy politicians get to go ahead and be even crappier healthcare spokespersons? I don't believe that Republican spin on epidemics is appropriate or informed or helpful in the least. So that is an email that comes from Elijah out there in cyberspace. So thank you for the two emails that came in. And if you still have something you'd like to say about Ron DeSantis, about the coronavirus, give us a call, 813-239-9663. We're going to go right now to Laura from Cape Coral. Hi, Laura. What's on your mind?
Hi. I would really just like to say that I would like to see it mandatory for everybody to wear their masks when they're going in a store. I think it's very important for people that are older, as I am, that have some issues. I'm diabetic as well. And I think it's important for everybody to care about everybody else and wear their mask. Period. It should be mandatory. And it's not about being looking ugly or doing anything like that, or the government telling you what to do. It's what you should do for mankind. This is to helping everybody else, your mothers, your fathers, sisters, brothers, babies. It's not about how you look or any of that. I'm sick of hearing that.
So, Karen, so the cities of St. Petersburg and Tampa have mask rules at this point. This afternoon at 1:30 is something from the Hillsborough County will consider a mask ordinance. And tomorrow, I believe, sometime this week, Pinellas County Commission is going to consider a mask ordinance. And Ron DeSantis said over the weekend that he didn't think it would be appropriate for a statewide rule about masks. He thinks it should be up to local governments because, in truth, there is different levels of coronavirus infection in different parts of the state. Would, if your county instituted a rule like that, is that something you would like?
Yes, I would like that, if they should. But that's why I believe it's spreading, is because people are not wearing their masks. And he really should make it mandatory. I understand there's some places that don't really have very much of it, but if you just wear it when you're in the grocery store or at Lowe's or Home Depot and do the social distancing, it really would help everybody, and maybe the state will start going down.
Laura, those are good points. I really appreciate you calling in and making those points. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for listening to me. Okay,
thanks.
Bye.
You're listening to WMNS Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Conan. It's 12:23 in the afternoon. If you'd like to join this conversation, you can call 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. I want to remind people that in a few minutes we're going to hear about a civil rights era incident in Jacksonville that was called Axe Handle Saturday and how it relates to this year's Republican National Convention. But we do have other people to go on the line right now. So let's go right now to Jeff in Port Richey. Hi, Jeff. What would you like to say?
Hi, Sean. Interesting stuff from the governor. Has anybody realized that it's not the Trump-supporting boomers that are spiking in positive cases? It's the protesting and rioting millennials that are spiking in positive cases?
Rioting millennials. I'm not sure what you're talking about because I haven't seen any rioting millennials.
The difference between Trump supporters and people who are more likely to support BLM and go out and set fires and steal things.
Okay, I think you're confusing different people because there's the people who are protesting are protesting peacefully. So, I think that it's trending younger, and I think that my take on it, which I, of course, don't know for sure what it is I think that the spike, it happened well before the BLM protesters, or the spike started, I should say. And so, to me, the spike coincided with a couple of weeks after the state reopened, and people were going to restaurants, people were going to bars, and then the protests happened. So, but I think it's something worth watching. You certainly could be right that it could be protesters that are adding to this. But we'll have to see. So I appreciate your call. Thank you so much, Jeff. Thanks for calling in from Port Richey. And why don't we take another call since we have a few people on the line. We'll go to Tony in St. Petersburg right now. Hi, Tony. Thanks for joining us on WMNF's Midpoint Monday.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm 79, so I'm in an age group, and I'm frankly rather angry at the cavalier attitude of the people in the bad that I see in their 30s and 40s to go into Publix and other public places without masks, go down the wrong aisle, act like there's no problem at all. I think Governor DeSantis is a stooge of Trump, and I also think people ought to look at the U.S. compared to other countries. In my whole lifetime, I've never seen us, this American country, at the bottom of the list, where we have about the worst record on the virus in the whole world. Check it out. We're near the bottom in terms of the number of cases per capita.
Yeah, the U.S. is near the bottom in number of cases per capita, and at the bottom, if you're talking about the most cases, yeah, the U.S. has the most cases near the worst number of per capita. It's a kind of a cavalier attitude, and it's a shame. And thank you for weighing in on that, Tony, because, you know, it could hurt people like you who are vulnerable if there's more spread of this, even among younger people.
That's for sure. I'm really very saddened by it, actually.
Yeah.
It's taking a lot away from my faith in human nature. Anyway.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much, Tony. Stay strong. All right. Thanks for calling. And I want to read this email that comes in. It's not signed. I wish you'd sign your emails. DeSantis will just screw the facts to whatever Trump wants to hear. Oh, I apologize, Mike. It says Mike in St. Pete there. So my bad. So thanks for that email, Mike in St. Pete says DeSantis will just screw the facts to whatever Trump wants to hear. And there is a lot of overlap between the message that's coming from the Trump administration and coming from the administration of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Neither one of them is wearing masks these days. We saw that one picture of Trump wearing a mask kind of in the bowels of a building one time, not when he was in front of a crowd. DeSantis wore a mask a few times a couple months ago, but it seems strange to be not sending the message that people should be wearing face coverings. This is my opinion. It seems strange to not send that message if you're in public. 813-239-9663. Let's go now to have some people on the line, and I'm just going to tell you in advance, we're going to transition to our next topic in a second. So if you, hopefully you'll stay on the line. I'll get to callers afterwards. But if I don't get to you right now, we will get to you later in the show. But let's try to take Eddie in Tampa right now. Hi, Eddie. What would you like to say?
Hey, how you doing?
Very good.
I'd like to say, enjoy the show. I'd like to say, Sanchez, the governor is actually spreading this virus. It's lackadaisical attitude about it. The numbers that they're putting on TV is on the news and stuff is not really actual numbers. I have people that work in the healthcare in the hospitals, and the emergency rooms are starting to fill up again, and they're doing it pretty quick. And people just are not wearing these masks. I just left a place just now to get a sandwich, and five people walked in there with no masks. And it was like four. It was already two people in there, and we had masks on. I'm like, nobody's just. They're not taking it serious because the governor's not making it serious. That's my take on that. He's actually spreading the virus. He's responsible for it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And hopefully, I think that, you know, today and tomorrow, if by the end of tomorrow, Pinellas County and Hillsborough County, the two largest counties in this area, are both have mask orders, and maybe they'll be even similar, maybe they'll coordinate a little bit. Who knows? Maybe people will start taking it more seriously if it seems really patchwork at this point, but we'll see. But I appreciate you pointing. Oh, go ahead.
I appreciate that. But I think people should, out of respect for others, just wear it. You don't have to believe in it. Just wear it out of respect for others. And I think we'll be a long ways ahead of the game.
You know, that word? It might be part of the key. I don't want to put words into anyone's mouth, but it seems that the observations that I've been making and that people are making is that there are some people out there who just feel that respecting others isn't part of their concern. I mean, I hate to say that. It sounds horrible. But, you know, just responding to what you said. Thanks, Eddie.
Thanks for your call. Thanks.
Thanks. And I want to go back to one of our previous callers, Jeff in Port Richey, who was talking about how he thought the protesters might be spreading it. And that is one difference between the protesters and some of the other groups that we've been seeing, is that quite a lot of the demonstrators are wearing face coverings. Not everyone, of course, a lot of them have been. All right. You know, I'm going to turn now. If you're on the line, please hold. I'll get to you first up when we're back. But I want to talk right now about Axe Handle Saturday. It's a civil rights era incident in Jacksonville. And the 60th anniversary of Axe Handle Saturday is in August. And it coincides with when the Republican National Convention will be in Jacksonville, and President Trump presumably will be making his acceptance speech for the nomination. And here's an interview that I did late last week with a Jacksonville activist who participated in a civil rights demonstration as a child. He also remembers Axe Handle Saturday. After we hear from him, we'll take your calls. The number is 813 239-9663. You can also email in during the talk, dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. And this is a talk with Ben Frazier, who is a founder and president of the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville.
We fancy ourselves as a new age civil rights organization. We're pretty active. We're pretty vocal, kind of fiery and passionate, which we think has kind of like been missing in recent years from the civil rights movement. Our mission is to stand up, speak out against any and all forms of social, racial, and economic injustice. We were created on Facebook. We have maybe 2,000 volunteers and supporters strong, and we have a steering committee of about 100 people. We meet monthly.
So I imagine the last few weeks you've had a lot of activities. What's the last few weeks been like?
Oh, it's been rather hectic, and the most momentous time in the four-year history of our nonprofit organization called the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville. And we have been more active than we've ever been before. To make a very long story short, we've organized and spearheaded several different marches in downtown Jacksonville around the local police department. We call our police department JSO. That stands for the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. There'll be many references to JSO probably in this conversation. And we've also marched around the courthouse and marched around City Hall. And we've had more support in the past 2 weeks than we've had in all the 4 years that we've been in existence.
It sounds like it's a common theme around the country and even around the world these days.
Yeah, you can imagine, and I never did, that there would be people marching for police reform in places like Amsterdam and Paris. I'm just overwhelmed, but also overjoyed.
So a lot of the events that we're going to be talking about right now happened in 1960. How would you describe the political climate, the climate for civil rights in Jacksonville, Florida in 1960?
Well, obviously, even then, it was a pretty vibrant situation going down in the early 60s. We had my mom, who was very actively involved in the civil rights movement, marching because she was following behind men with the names like Rutledge Pearson. He was a local civil rights guy, school teacher, and also Dr. King. But my dad had told my mom not to participate in the civil rights marches. He was a Baptist minister, and I suppose he wanted to keep her mom from out of trouble, but my mother didn't listen. She went on down to the marches anyway, but the good part is, she took me with her. I remember early on marching with her outside a local cafeteria called Morrison's Cafeteria, where black people could work, but they couldn't eat. And I held her hand, and I watched as a flatbed truck went by that was filled with Ku Klux Klansmen in full regalia. And I remember looking at my mom and saying, I was afraid and scared. And she said, well, Benny, don't worry. They're not going to do anything to you. But I noticed one thing. She didn't come home and tell my daddy about that incident, because he would have been upset. But we stood there and carried signs. And around that same time in Hemings Park, the center of the city in Jacksonville, Hemings Park, they had some folks sitting in at the white lunch counters trying to get a hot dog and a Coke. And right in the middle of everything, on one hot August 27th day, actually 60 years to August 27th, 2020, we had the white Ku Klux Klansmen passing out axe handles. And that event would become known as Axe Handle Saturday. The sheriff's department was complicit. The mayor's office was complicit. And they just watched black people get beat and had to run around, frightened and were terrorized by this white mob. 22 people injured. It would change Jacksonville forever. But that was the tenor. That was the tone of the times back then, as the nation was going through the rigors that would lead to the passage of the 1964 Voting Rights Act and 65 Civil Rights Act. All of that was happening up in then. You remember, we were watching it on the news. Walter Cronkite was the guy who was leading us at that time on the television. And we saw all these things happening on television, on the news. And I'm glad to say that so many Americans did not like what they were seeing. They saw people, of course, being beaten with billy clubs, and as they crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, you remember the pictures, people being bitten by German Shepherd dogs and shot down by high-powered water hoses. And America did not like that as they watched it on the news and as they attempted to eat the evening dinner, and it changed. Congress passed these landmark civil rights laws, and times changed because of the tenor of time. But even when you make the comparison back then to now, it was nothing compared to what's going on right now. This is, in fact, a revolution. This is clearly not a moment. This is a movement. And it is happening before your very eyes. People everywhere are now starting this tremendous reassessment about race. We know, for example, that there are numerous instances of racial discrimination in law enforcement, numerous instances of racial bias in the criminal justice system, from arrest to incarceration, sentencing, and to release. We know that what we are watching right now, as we take our blinders off, is that there's some conflict. We need to use this as an opportunity to change. I suggest that, yes, a city, a nation, or for that matter, a world can change for the better. I just think that we have to begin to engage in wholesome, productive, honest dialogue and discussion, grab the bull by the horns with the thought that we're going to resolve conflict and map out some common sense solutions. That does sound reasonable, doesn't it?
Sounds reasonable. And I want to remind our listeners that we're talking with Ben Frazier. He's the founder and president of the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville. We'll probably get to talk more about what's happening today. But going back to 1960, you mentioned that you were at the lunch counter demonstrations or outside those. Were you actually there on Axe Handle Saturday?
No, I was not. Thank God. I was home where my father wanted me to be. And my mom was there too. But it was a tumultuous time in Jacksonville, as many cities have located in the South. Jacksonville has a legacy of racial hatred and a legacy of segregation, and kind of like turning its head, looking the other way, and turning a deaf ear to our demands or to just treating people like people should be treated. There was, in fact, an ideology of white privilege and white supremacy, meaning that some people felt that they were better than black people simply because of the color of their skin, which we know today is absolutely absurd. Most of us didn't have a darn thing to do with what package we came in. You know, who knows, we had a choice. Maybe we may have picked and chosen something different. But you get what you get, and I think everyone has the right to be proud of who they are. I don't know whether we'll all sit around the mulberry tree and sing Kumbaya. The bottom line is, I think each of us has a right to be proud of who we are and to expect of this democracy a fair shot. That's all we want. You know, I want my brick rambler with the picket fence and maybe a SUV. And just like the next guy, I want my children to go to school and to be happy, and for us to get some sense of happiness and joy. That's what we want. We want families that are coming together in love and in peace. And that's what we want, for flesh of our flesh and blood of our blood. And I think we all have a right to that. And under this democracy, that is what we should have. We got to look at these economic disparities, these health care disparities, this education disparities, things that are simply not fair. We're looking at this fairly, you begin to recognize, maybe these black folks aren't really getting the best shot. Maybe they are kind of coming up on the low end of the totem pole, and maybe they're not just playing the race card. Maybe we need to listen to what people are saying. What you're listening to right now is pain and suffering, and you haven't listened to it for so long. You didn't listen to it when Muhammad Ali tried to tell you. You didn't listen to it when Colin Kaepernick tried to tell you. You didn't listen to it when Martin Luther King told you. You didn't listen when Bobby Seale tried to tell you. Huey Newton, Malcolm X, a host of others for the past 400 years since we came here in 1619. You haven't listened. What you told us was push it to the side. Stop crying about it. Move on. I didn't have anything to do with it. That was people who were here long before me. We get that. We understand that. But what I'm telling you is that when you begin to look at the inequality, the injustices heaped on the back of people who were brought here in 1619, mistreated. Some of the things that were conducted against black people clearly were against world standards. It was genocide, with the classic definition of the word, conducted right here in the land of the free and home of the brave. It was just wrong. Families destroyed, people beaten, men castrated, women raped, children beat after running out of a house that the Knight Rider set on fire. Come on, four black girls at Central Baptist Church were actually, there were a lot of people who were hurt in that bombing back then, but four black girls got killed. Emmett Till, you just name it. There are numerous instances that go back 400 years where people were just mistreated. It wasn't right. So now all of a sudden we're having to look at it. So people are saying, well, how far do you want to go back? We want to go back as far as necessary. What we want to do is to correct this. Why? Because it is just another stunning example, if you look at it under a microscope, of man's inhumanity to man. So that right now I weep for my people. My grief is profound. I think that it is clear that our suffering is deep, that our cry is poignant and compelling. I cry for the United States of America right now. Why? Because it still refuses to recognize the fundamental dignity and humanity of black people. It's wrong. So that now we get people who are out in the streets now, 1,000 strong, and 1,000 strong, and they're saying, Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. And I'm not crazy. I mean, I look at this like with real world eyes. And I know that there are a lot of white folks out there saying, Black Lives Matter? What do you mean, Black Lives Matter? All lives matter. Yes, yes, yes. I get it. But we're not struggling like so many other people are to put up a false narrative. We know that other people's lives matter as well. But other lives have been recognized, and it still appears that ours are not being recognized. We know, for example, that we're dealing with a global pandemic. Well, guess what? Black people have been dealing with healthcare pandemics for the past several generations. We suffer more cancer than whites, more infant mortality than whites, more asthma than whites. You ever been inside a kidney dialysis center? All you see is black people. high blood pressure. I mean, there are some stunning health care disparities that are clearly epidemic in terms of how pervasive they are. And they've been going on literally for years and ignored. Can you believe that? Literally ignored. These appalling statistics ignored. So now, all of a sudden, George Floyd comes along. And the rest of the world is starting to open it, is open its eyes, pleading for his life, calling out his mother's name with a knee, the full weight of a white man, with his knee on this man's neck, in a video that none of us could stand watching. 8 minutes and 46 seconds. The full weight of a man on his back. Now, understand this much. See this, if you will, a different way. What about the full weight of a society with its knee on a people's neck for 400 years? A society that is, in fact, imbued with ideas and ideology that penetrates several aspects of society, the law enforcement part, to the court system, to everyday life, to education. All of these disparities represent knees on the neck of an entire people in heinous disregard for black life.
Ben Frazier with the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville. I want to ask you, you mentioned the 60th anniversary of Axe Handle Saturday is coming up. That's when the Republican convention is going to be in Jacksonville. What are people saying about those two things happening on the same day?
Well, we're seeing this as a political oxymoron because so many of us actually see Donald Trump, we call him 45, as the epitome of white supremacy in America today. We see him as being anti-black, and we see his scheduled coronation on this momentous occasion, on this commemoration for Axe Handle Saturday, as something that's not good. We're hopeful that Jacksonville will have a peaceful Republican National Convention. Our concern, roughly 65, 70 days out, is that a lot of folks on both ends of the political spectrum will be coming here to make their feelings known. We have, in fact, invited folks who stand up for truth and justice to join us in the streets to protest. Our concern is that there may be counter-protesters, and we're hopeful that it does not end up as a violent mix as it did in Charlottesville when Heather Heyer, a young woman working for a law firm, was standing up for justice when all of a sudden a white supremacist driving a car drove over her. We're hopeful that they'll get a handle on security, but that we will in fact be able to exercise our constitutional rights. Now, even before they got here, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Department went to its own little bit of overreaction due to people who were marching in the streets, some of which engaged in rock throwing and graffiti writing, but it certainly was not the massive group of thousands of people. And they overreacted. They came out in riot gear. They came out with two tanks. One judge started giving the protesters large bails to pay. And it is that kind of escalation as opposed to de-escalation that we don't want to see this department engage in, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, JSO. We're hopeful that they will conduct themselves not as warriors, but as people who are sworn to serve and to protect, and we want them to act like servants and not warriors.
Well, Ben Frazier with the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville. Those were my questions, but is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners in the Tampa Bay area and let them know about Axe Handle Saturday or about anything else with the civil rights movement?
Well, we just want to be clear that the issue that started all of this was police misconduct. There needs to be substantial community policing in cities across America, closer relationship police officers with communities that they are sworn to serve and to protect. We don't want to see them continue to exercise excessive use of force. We don't want them to treat black people differently than from white citizens. We don't want them to shoot black people on a disproportionate basis. We recognize there's significant need for community involvement in terms of police accountability councils that can review charges of alleged police misconduct. We want to see that qualified immunity that police officers have to give them rights that regular folks don't have removed insofar as the state of Florida is concerned, the Uniform Police Officers Rights Act. We want that change. That's ridiculous. Police should have to deal with the same things that we're dealing with. And we also want to see police departments do a better job of weeding out the bad apples. We're not crazy. We know that not all police officers are bad. Nobody believes that. So don't drink the Kool-Aid, okay? Listen, I'm like anybody else. Something goes wrong in my neighborhood. When I call 911, I want somebody to come in a hurry. But the bottom line is, I don't want them to come to hurt me because of the color of my skin. This is a wonderful opportunity for America to address some age-old issues and challenges. I do believe that a city, a state, and a country can't change for the better. Mine is one of faith and not fear.
Well, Ben Frazier, thank you so much for joining us on WMNF today. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
God bless you, Sean, and thanks for having me.
Well, that was Ben Frazier. He's founder and president of the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, and he was talking about Axe Handle Saturday in 1960. That's when a white mob beat up black civil rights activists. The Republican National Convention will meet in Jacksonville on the 60th anniversary of Axe Handle Saturday. So I want to know what your thoughts are about what we've heard so far. Here's the number to call in, 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. You're listening to WMNF Tampa. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:53 in the afternoon. We're going to read a couple of emails that came in. This person from 727, sorry, Randy in Palm Harbor writes, as an old white guy, I agree with everything Ben Frazier is saying or has said. So thank you for that, Randy. I'd also like to read this one. And there are a couple about COVID-19 that we're still talking about. Jerome says, wouldn't anyone who contracted COVID-19 and recovered then be considered medically compromised, making them more likely to be immunocompromised? I don't know that the answer to that, because some people have been able to recover from COVID-19 and then still be healthy, but some people have been symptomatic for months later. So I don't know the answer to that, Jerome. I apologize, but I will ask a doctor next time I talk to one, which will probably be soon. We also have Advanced Living writing, Ron DeSantis, like his hero Trump and most GOP politicians, is a skilled professional liar. He doesn't care about the health of Florida's people or environment. He only cares about political power and covering up for Trump's incompetence. So that's an email from Advanced Living out there. Teresa in Riverview writes, when the criteria for testing changed from symptomatic to asymptomatic, there were probably a lot of young people waiting to be tested, and that may be having some influence on results also. So thank you for that, Teresa. That's a good point. Michael writes, I'm just going to read it the way it's written because I don't know if I get it, and it sounds like he's using some coded terms, but this is what Michael writes. If you listen to the propaganda about wearing a mask, it is about slowing, not stopping the flu. Yes, more and more people will test positive for the flu. This is inevitable. It sounds like Michael is pretending that COVID-19 is the flu, which it's not, because 119,000 people have not died from the flu this year in the U.S., but they have died from the coronavirus. Jeff writes, Jeff in Newport Richey writes, I wish you would have mentioned masks while I was on the air. That way I could have pointed out to you that they're obviously not protecting anybody. Good call cutting me off and hanging up on me first. Signed, Jeff in Newport Richey, who I had on for quite a while. And I don't know if there's any evidence whether they're not protecting anybody at protests, because we don't know if these are protesters, as you speculate, that the protesters are getting sick. There is a lot of medical information that the masks are protecting people. All right, well, let's go now to Connie on the line. Hi, Connie. Thanks for calling into the show. Welcome to WMNF's Midpoint.
Yes, I want to really appreciate you and your guest today. And just to say that the cry of justice that African people have been in a continuation mode generation after generation, even if people think we are going back to a passive peace, it won't exist, because now our children and our grandchildren have been able to see with their own eyes the murder of George Floyd and the conversations that we continue to have to have in our communities in terms of how to conduct themselves and how to come back home safe when they're in the public and have interaction with the police. And I'm just hoping that in this city, where we know that the murder of Mr. Floyd have exposed so many other disparities, as your guest laid out, in terms of health care, also the ongoing gentrification that is occurring in our community, that we are hope that the leadership is able to step forth so we can lay out a solution for healing. You know, simply to have conversation for conversation's sake won't do at this moment, that we need to have some real sound solutions, that we are ready to move forward and to deal with the ongoing systematic disparity and racism that exists in America. Thank you.
Thank you, Connie. Thanks for calling in. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we have a few minutes left, 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. I'm asking people what they think about how Ron DeSantis is handling the coronavirus outbreak. I'm also asking people how they feel about Axe Handle Saturday, a historical event in Jacksonville, and especially about the Republican convention being held in Jacksonville on the anniversary. I believe we have Hugh on the line as well. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sean. Thank you. Yeah, like most people, I hope that my being appalled by having the convention on such an auspicious holiday just points out that throughout my life, I've seen multiple pictures on Time Magazine of Alabama, colored Alabamans tied to trees and brutally beaten up and even murdered. And on WEDU recently, seeing people showing the pictures of a strange fruit hanging from a tree, which is, you know, the lynchings. And it's just, it's amazing that black people have the strength and the moral compass to not give in. And it's just really refreshing to see that white people are now also not being afraid to step over that barrier, that social barrier that causes people to put up a wall of denial and not speak out. And I encourage people to use the EEOC programs, to use the employee assistant programs, to talk to a clinical psychologist or psychologist in their area. Encourage their kids to talk about this, because if you don't actually say it yourself, if you don't say that racism is bad and that murdering black people unjustly is bad, then you haven't really jumped over that wall. You haven't really broken through that barrier.
Yeah, all right. Thank you. I appreciate the call. Thanks for calling in, Hugh. And I want to thank everyone who called in. This has been WMNF's Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. I want to thank Rob Lori, Frank Knox, Miss Julie, and DT for their help. Tomorrow at noon, Mark Bureau will host Midpoint Tuesday, is my understanding. Stay tuned now for Latino 54, and that's coming up right after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. If you want to watch the interview that I did today with, that I did last, late last week and played today with Ben Frazier from the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, it should be on our Facebook and website this afternoon, WMNF News and WMNF.org. Thanks so much for your financial support last week, and thank you so much for listening to WMNF Midpoint Monday.